And welcome back to the second edition of the AltPorn.net podcast. This time around, we have a conversation with author, editor, blogger, robotics engineer, and occasional nudie model, Violet Blue. We started off talking about Skype, the program that I've been using to talk to interviewees via the internet. Violet was lamenting the problems she had with the program while interviewing porn's elder stateswoman, Nina Hartley.
It's a pain in the ass. The service is slow. It's not user-friendly. It takes fucking forever to buy credits. And then there's always, like, some little technical problem with it. You know, like, there's an echo in someone's side or something like that. And I did a little research and found out that it's a lot of people have problems with it. So
well,
I'm going to try Gizmo.
It's European.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. No, I have no idea what that means. But, So, yeah, well, see, you're interviewing big-time people and stuff like that, and so now this is like this is my big-time interview, right?
No, I'm just lucky that they're saying yes.
Yeah.
When I email them.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
and part of it is just like, they're like, what's a podcast? Okay, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. But I think people are starting to catch on to that a little bit, but... You know, somebody like her, she doesn't need to give a shit. I mean...
No way. No.
She can just show up and, you know, people throw money at her, so I'm sure. So it's you know... She,
totally.
Yeah, so...
I was extremely honored and really, really nervous, actually, to interview her, which is... I mean, I know her socially as well, but still interviewing her, I was just kind of like, hi! You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. It can be a little nerve-wracking, I'm sure.
Definitely.
So, okay. I wrote down a few questions. I thought I should be mildly prepared. And,
okay.
So, you know, better than just winging it and, you know, sound
like...
Well,
that's cool. We can riff off those if we want to.
Yeah, dude. So. It's like a riff, man. We're just going to sit here and we're just going to, you know, rap about shit. You know, it's going to be cool. You know, it's I don't know what the
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So
it's like two old friends in the back of a limo with a bunch of coke and whores, right?
That is exactly what I had in mind.
That's the vibe of your podcast.
Yes, that's really what I'm going for with this whole thing. Is that kind
right.
of style? Okay. So my first question is: it's one of those questions that you ask, and you're just like. You ask as an interviewer because it's a really loaded and huge question, so you can just sit back and listen and, you know, maybe take a nap for 5 minutes. So, how'd you get where you are now? As a, you know, you're a big time, well, okay, you edit a lot of books, you write books, you're doing journalism. How'd you get there? Like, how did you get from where you were to where you are?
Well, I'd say completely by accident.
Uh-huh.
I don't have any formal education.
Uh-huh. Like, none at all?
The only type of education... Like, I didn't make it past ninth grade.
Oh, okay. I was going to make some jokes, but it's probably better that I didn't then, so... Yeah.
No, you can joke about it all you want. Actually, I feel totally cool about it because to make a long story short, I had one parent. I didn't know the rest of my family, and the one parent I had was a crackhead, and so I ran away from home right before I turned 14 and lived on the streets until I was about 18 years old. So those, like, little punk kids that you see on the streets asking for change,
oh, yeah.
That was me for like 3 or 4 years of my life.
Well,
I got myself off the streets and just, you know, did the usual round of a lot of really odd jobs until I found myself working at a place that I really liked, which at the time was Good Vibrations. And mm-hmm. I had been doing a lot of, like, independent writing and writing for zines pretty much the entire time, you know, throughout my teen years.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got hired at Good Vibrations, after me working there for a couple months, they realized that they had a writer working there and said, hey, do you, basically they said, do you want Susie Bright's old job? And I was like, you're fucking kidding me, right? And so I ended up, I ended up writing the porn reviews and book reviews for them, for their catalog and their website, and then doing a bunch of their educational writing, because to work, it used to be that to work at Good Vibrations, you had to go through this really humongous sex education program where you learned from a whole bunch of different sexologists, and, you know, it was just like this legion, hours and hours and hours, and required reading list and required viewing list, and and it was just really intense. And so I just sort of stuck with it, and I stuck with the educational part of it, and ended up working at Good Vibrations for 7.5 years. And so pretty much, you know, it was just sort of like I went from sort of a coffee shop girl, you know, to working at a job about, you know, a topic that I really loved, which was sex and sexuality, and being able to keep writing. And as it happened, my writing looked polished and professional enough that it actually passed muster. And I got discovered by a couple of publishers while working there, who were taking my, what I was writing, and put, you know, quoting it on the backs of their books and stuff like that. And finally, you know, a couple of publishers took me out to lunch and said, do you have any ideas for books? And I was like, fuck yeah, I do.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's all just sort of been like luck and community, definitely, you know, like meeting Jono. Like I've known, when Jono launched Fleshbot, he emailed me and was like, Tiny Nibbles is great. I love your site. Can you write us something that says, you know, yay for Fleshbot? And so I said, sure. And I was like, I didn't even know who the guy was, but I was just like, oh, whatever, cool. Fleshbot seems like a great idea.
Right.
So I wrote that. And then when I finally met Jono at ABN last year, it was one of those sort of like instant connections that you have with someone where you're like, oh my God, this person's like a grounded human being, unlike all these totally fake, scary motherfuckers floating around here, you know, looking for like, you know, teenage girls and shit like that. And Dono and I just sort of like stuck together the whole weekend, just drinking and going to parties. And, you know, and he was one of the only gay guys at AVN. So I was just like, oh my God, you do not ever leave my side. You're so, you know, because it's AVN is so like horrifyingly straight. It's just like,
that kind of
scary. I mean, I'm straight, but still, it's just like cloying. It's like suffocating.
Well,
so anyway, yeah, okay, and then, yeah, you know, when Dono heard that I didn't have a job, he was just kind of like, hey, I steal from your site all the time. Why don't you come work for me? So it's just all been kind of luck and meeting people and stuff. So
right. So
anyway,
you,
sorry.
You give hope to gutter punks everywhere, basically, is what you're telling me.
I think so, actually, basically. I mean, I was, I lived the life, you know, with sleeping in squats, sleeping in the park, and sleeping in abandoned cars, and you sound like you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I didn't do it myself, but I knew plenty of people who did. I mean, I was pretty lucky in that I had a pretty good family, and I had a pretty stable family, but I certainly, you know, had lots of friends and still do have friends who've, you know, gone through that or are going through that, so... And hey, I watched the movie I watched Suburbia, so I know, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But well, okay, why is AVN so straight? That kind of surprises me because the gay porn industry is quite lucrative, and I would think that's a big part You know. I would think that's a big part of what they're trying to cover in the general adult industry.
You know, you would think that, but the general adult industry is one of the most homophobic places I've been outside of, you know, Colorado, where Focus of the Family is located.
Have you ever been to Indiana?
I have not been to Indiana. Is it scary?
Well, the Klan kind of ran Indiana until, like, 1920.
Ew.
So, yeah. Well,
yeah,
okay.
That kind of says...
I mean, I live in a relatively liberal town in Indiana where there's a big Big Ten university and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, there's little pockets of, like, blueness, but it's very red. Let me just put it that way. It's very, very red. Yeah.
Well,
it's one of those places
more than they know.
It's one of those places where you really know that your presidential vote doesn't matter. Because it's, you know, the way the state's going. So it's kind of like, maybe I'll make a statement and vote, you know, libertarian this time, but it really doesn't make much difference.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
But yeah,
yeah,
okay.
ABN is super straight. It really shocked me, actually. I mean, just going there and seeing how straight it is, it's kind of like, okay, I get it. It's the porn industry. All these yahoos show up so that they can see the starlets and stuff like that. But now, you know, having sort of worked, I wouldn't say I work in it, because the majority of the porn industry and ABN and all of ABN's affiliates clearly do not like me. But like, I went to the keynote last year, and you wouldn't believe some of the things that they were saying. They're like, the gay market is getting really large, and it's something we need to start paying attention to. And I'm just like, God, where have you been for the past fucking 20 years? You know, don't you know how much revenue this brings in? And like,
yeah.
And it's just, you know, they're completely horrified by, you know, bisexual performers and by the bisexual genre. And like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's, you know, any straight performer in the, and we're talking, you know, mainstream porn, ABN porn and stuff like that, like
right.
Any performer that, like, you know, if he did a bisexual film, it would ruin his career. And like Nacho Vidal, when he did Face Fuckers for Evil Angel, like, it was a huge fucking scandal, you know, because it was just like, oh God, he's doing an all gay title. You know,
God forbid. Yeah. You know, it's funny because, and part of this is that most of these are puff pieces, but there was an HBO, it was like a 6-part real sex series called, oh, what the fuck was that thing called?
I don't know, I try not to watch those.
It was kind of mildly interesting in some sense. Obviously, it didn't cover the bad stuff, because the real sex stuff is always very much, they're all puff pieces, but...
Oh, totally. It's a pastiche.
Yeah, yeah. But they did like a 6-part thing called about sort of the porn industry, and it was called like Going On in the Valley or some shit like that. But they did...
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
But they did a whole episode on the gay industry. I mean, obviously, most of that has to do with the male gay industry. But they, you know,
right.
They really dealt a lot with that. One of the interesting things was dealing with performers who were straight, but who were performing in gay male oriented porn, and that was kind of interesting to see
right.
These guys who were like, yeah, well, you know, I can make like $3,000 in an hour here, and I can make like $100. Doing a straight movie, so
yeah. And also the sex is a lot safer in gay porn as well,
right?
It's just the precautions that they take in gay porn about safe sex are just 10,000 times smarter than the precautions taken in straight porn.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically in gay porn, they proceed as far as, you know, bodily fluids and penetration goes, they proceed as if their partner would be infected. So,
right.
You know, so anyone performing in gay porn is much safer than catching chlamydia or something and working on a straight set.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So, well, that's kind of disappointing, but it's disappointing overall and in general that it surprises me, but you know better than I do, but it surprises me that you know, AVN sort of representing the mainstream is... hasn't caught on to the fact that gay porn is so big, or at least sort of is in denial about it. Huh, that's weird.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, and definitely, you know, HBO obviously gets it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if there's one thing you can say about the real sex stuff is that they cover a lot of, you know, in the segments that they do, they cover a lot of different kinds of sexuality. I mean, and it's not always, you know, it's not always the most attractive people doing it. You know, there was one segment they did on like a masturbation group, you know, people getting together and masturbating
mm-hmm.
together. And, you know, most of these people were not particularly super attractive. You know, the people running it were, you know, well into their 40s and, you know, well over 200 pounds and, you know, you know, they did their thing, you know, and it is kind of surprising.
And that's so refreshing. That's refreshing though. You know, I mean, that's pretty much what everybody else looks like.
Well, yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That is what, you know, your average, human, you know, most people on the street look like, except in LA.
Totally.
But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. So, okay, so you do a lot of reading, writing, editing, all this stuff. So how do you get any work done doing all this stuff? I mean, well, you have to read, you're reading, writing, editing, all sorts of sexual material. Or, I mean, how do you get any work done, like having this stuff in front of you, like, all the time? Or...
How do I get any work done?
Yeah, like, I mean, how do I couldn't go 10 minutes and I'd be like, I gotta, you know, take care of this, and then I gotta take a nap for like an hour. And then, or are you...
And then I have to snack and have a cigarette.
Yeah,
they don't
exactly.
Smoke, but don't.
Or are you so jaded that you just, like, you know, you need a hermaphrodite to fuck an elk or something to you know, I mean... I hear a lot of people, and it's probably especially people who are really active in, I guess, the mainstream industry, and you sort of it becomes so clinical for them, you know, that it seems like a lot of them don't get into it, and that has to kind of suck. How has that experience been for you?
Well, it's interesting because, like, at this point, I work at home for the most part, and when I'm here working, I mean, I'm by myself here at home, and except for, you know, two annoying little cats that I love very much. You know, if I get really horny and really turned on, I can just take care of business and then go back to work for the most part, you know, and just grab a snack and take it to my computer.
Yeah,
So it doesn't, you know, I'm definitely still really turned on by what I do, get really titillated by what I do. And because, you know, because I'm looking at porn all day, or I'm, you know, reading someone's sex book, or I need to watch a porn film because a producer wants to say they want a review or an opinion or something like that, I definitely, like, you know, I'm very, very happy when I get turned on by this stuff, because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm totally not jaded. But I'm also really smart about how I consume in terms of like pornographic material.
Right.
So for instance, like, I got a whole bunch of mainstream titles that were just like, you know, the big boob Barbie blocks, just going through all the fake motions, you know, for lesbian tapes, and most of those are still sitting in a pile next to my television set, because I know that when I watch those, I'm going to be pretty bored.
Oh,
and
right.
If I get turned on by them, it's going to be a surprise. And so I try to, you know, it's sort of like watching what you eat, you know? So it's like, hey, Doritos, but I'm only going to have Doritos like once in a while, because I will feel totally sick to my stomach and I'll never want to eat chips again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, you know, and so I try to watch a lot of indie porn, and I try to just mix things up, and my work ends up revolving around, like, deadlines. So I'll go, you know, I'll have to go crazy on a deadline for, like, a couple of weeks. So I'll have to sit at my computer and write for, like, 2 or 3 weeks straight, and I won't have time to read, and I won't have time to watch porn. But then when I'm done with my deadline, I'll be totally fucking sick of writing, but I'll be like, God, I haven't watched a porn movie in a really long time, you know? So I can kind of just, like, keep rotating and keep juggling things.
Right.
I'm really lucky in that I'm dating a really cute boy who is really, really cool about not being monogamous, and really cool about being totally open and experimenting with a wide variety of different types of sex. And I've tried to just take it really slow. So there are a lot of things that people have probably assumed that I've done everything in the book, but there are actually a zillion things that I've never done sexually, and I'm just kind of going really, really slow with it. So, you know, eventually someday I'll actually have a threesome. I've never had one. I would like to, but, you know, I'm not rushing to it because, you know, just because I feel like I need to have one, you know, or anything like that. So I'm just trying to be smart and healthy about it, and just, you know, kind of trying to be normal about it instead of trying to go balls out and do everything all at once.
Balls out.
You said balls.
Yeah, you said balls. So you could, I'm probably going to mispronounce her name, but you contributed to Carly Milne's, is it Milne? Is that how you pronounce her name?
It's Milne.
Milne? Oh, so it's
Milne.
It's American then. Okay, Carly, I've been mispronouncing in my head for the past 2 years. So Carly.
Oh, that's okay. I do that all the time.
Right, right. So Carly Milne's book, you contributed a chapter to that, and I have that on my shelf actually above my head, but I didn't finish reading it because it wasn't a video game or a porn site. So So are
that's okay. I don't have a copy of the book. I haven't read the book because the publisher never sent me my copy.
That's really
so
awesome.
Yeah,
that's great.
I don't know what else is in that book, really.
I
actually read first at the reading, and then Jenny from Boing Boing snagged me and sold me away, so I didn't get to hear the rest of the readings.
So. Oh, so yeah. Well, you know. No, it all sucks, so don't worry. No, that's not true. That's not true. I've read at least two of them.
Don't you have friends in that book?
You
have some friends in it. You have to be careful.
Yeah, I guess I do, so I better shut up.
Or at least some business associates.
Yeah. So I better pipe down about that. But, excuse me. Yeah, so are women changing the porn industry?
Are women changing the porn industry?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I think women are changing the porn industry, but it's not in the way that people expect. I think that that women are changing the porn industry by watching porn and talking about the fact that they're watching porn. I don't think that women are changing the porn industry from the inside very much, because I think the porn industry, and I'm talking about the mainstream porn industry, not you know, the alt porn industry, but
well, whatever the
mainstream
that
porn
is,
industry.
Yeah, right.
but yeah, the mainstream porn industry is really, you know, has had a history of putting fake names in director slots, fake female names in director slots to make the film seem more women friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so a guy will direct it and then they'll put a woman's name on it, you know, to make it seem like there are women directors in the industry. And there are women directors in the industry, and a couple of women have actually done some pretty cool stuff, like Veronica Hart, for instance.
Right.
But, you know, for the most part, like, a lot of the women directors basically are doing the exact same things that the guys are doing, with the exact same formula and the exact same stars and the exact same lighting and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not actually shooting it from, you know, necessarily their point of view, or they're so pornified and they got so much of their sexual upbringing within the porn industry that all they know to do is to imitate the sex that's around them. So, you know, you see the same old bullshit coming from a lot of the women directors.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no easy answer to this, but I think women are changing the porn industry, but it's not in any typical ways, that's for sure.
So you think it's more of a, it's more on a sort of a, not so much a consumer level, but in a sense, in a consumer level and in sort of a, how should I say, a commentator media level, and not so much on the production level in that sense. Okay.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. I think that on the production level, there are, you know, outside of the mainstream porn industry, there are some women that are doing some pretty interesting things. You know, like Tristan Taramino, for instance, is doing some interesting stuff, and it's you know, I love Tristan, and she's, you know, has worked with Evil Angel, and she's working now with Adam and Eve, so she's technically in the mainstream industry, but she at least comes from an interesting outsider point of view. You know, she's an out, open lesbian. She's actually a dyke. She dates transgender people. You know,
right.
And she doesn't, you know, that ethic stays in her head all the time with what she does. So that's at least interesting. But yeah, I think that, you know, from a consumerist point of view, that's definitely, you know, and Tristan is a consumer of porn as well, so, you know, that speaks to her experience too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really how women are voicing their opinions about porn and sort of gathering and putting together what they like on the web is what's really changing it. Women are making their own porn sites. They're having their own sex blogs, you know, and they're just, you know, they're just saying fuck it and enjoying sex openly in any way, shape, form that they want to.
Right.
And, like, in this club that I've got this club right now that's got 450 female members in it, that's a discussion group on TribeNet, and called the Smart Girls Porn Club. And the women in there are just out of control with their porn tastes, and it's surprising, and it's exciting, and it's interesting, and they're always finding new porn, and some of them are sick of it, and they're starting to make their own, and it's just like, well, fuck yeah.
Right.
That to me is kind of where the revolution is with porn and women. It's women watching porn and reacting to it.
Right.
And in a way, it's, you know, how women relate to one another about the subject.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to ask you, what are some of those sites, can you identify some of those sites, blogs and or more sort of traditional porn sites that are women run that you sort of hold up as examples or paradigms for what you're talking about here?
What do you mean exactly? Paradigms for what women are doing, or paradigms for what they're reacting to? I'm just making this shit up as I go.
I don't know what I'm... No. In terms of women who are really doing stuff outside the mainstream, who are, you know, women who are starting their own sites, who are sort of changing some of the ways that people interact with porn. What are some of your personal favorites?
Well, I think one of my favorites is actually, believe it or not, it's Adult DVD Talk. And the reason I like Adult DVD Talk is that it's a big, scary grab bag of a bunch of different people in the forums. And there's a good amount of mainstream performers and mainstream directors in there, but there's also a bunch of indie performers and indie directors in there as well. But what I like about Adult DVD Talk is that a lot of the forums are moderated by women, and they're moderated by really cool, very savvy pro-porn women that are trying to get more female voices reviewing titles and reviewing things from outside the industry. Like, they get all of the hypocrisy about marketing to women that comes from things like ADN. Mm-hmm. So I really like what the women on ADVD Talk are doing, and I think that's advvdtalk.com. And then there's a huge bunch of women in Australia, especially like Melbourne, Australia, mm-hmm. that are writing erotica and blogging and stuff like that. But there's one woman in particular who goes under the moniker of Ms. Naughty, and she's you know, pretty straight in her tastes, but she has a huge empire of sites that keep her very, very well in business, and she's just going for it. Like, I think one of her sites is called ForTheGirls.com, and she's got all kinds of stuff there, articles, porn, erotica, and she goes for it, which I really admire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and then there's just a lot of other women that are also, like, around the world doing different things. There's Maria Beatty in New York, who has been doing Blue Productions for a long time. It's BLEU Productions.com, and her SM films and her porn films have been, like, winning film festival awards all over the world because they're so beautifully shot, and they're just amazing, you know. And then there's, like, Stella Films, which comes out of, I believe, Australia as well, and they've been doing a bunch of really interesting, cool-looking films. Lust Films, I think they're lustfilms.tv, and I think they're out of Spain. They've been making some really hot, unconventional porn, and that's, you know, that's just one woman doing it herself, and... It's cool stuff.
Right on.
But yeah. they come from a critical perspective about porn, and they're not doing it because they're feminist or they're trying to make a feminist statement or any bullshit like that. They're just like, they want to find stuff that's hot to jack off to.
Right.
Oh, and Anna Spann in England, you know, Anna Spann is tons of porn that's actually difficult to get here, but is widely available in the UK. And she even has a book about shooting her own porn that's full of still really hot stills from her films, and that's really great too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh my God! And I'm just not even touching on the lesbian market, but you know, which is a lot of it's based here in the Bay Area.
Right.
But that's pretty awesome too. Like Pink and White Productions is really excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I could just go on and on.
Oh, no, I understand. I understand. Well, okay. So back to this other thing that we touched on a minute ago, and you kind of got into it. We talked about. Women starting their own sites and things like that. And, you know, tie this into the actual subject of the website that I do. I another question that I'll throw out here for you. What is alt porn? There's sort of a...
It's a complicated question.
That's a very complicated question, and I'll frame it in a couple of ways. Compare and contrast. There's one side of it that's sort of more subcultural, that's dealing with stuff that's related to, you know, subcultures, gothic subculture, punk subculture, things like that. And it sort of is more related to look and the way that subculture tends to approach things. So that's why you get music pulled into that and shit like that, and it turns into a... you know, some kind of hipster bullshit. And then there's,
right.
Yeah, there's, the other side of it is alt porn as, approaching sexuality in a different way and not getting off necessarily on it being guilty and bad and naughty, which sometimes is fun, but sort of making it a healthier thing and embracing differences. And so it's interesting to see that there's that's one thing that seems like there's some conflict within this genre that gets called alt porn. Is there's folks mm-hmm. who do things like, there's sites like Nofo and veg porn and or maybe it's veg porn, I don't know, depends on how you decide to pronounce it. If you're talking about vegetables or vegans, you have to ask that. I'm a fucking idiot. The person who does that site is going to be like, this guy is a fucking douchebag, and she's going to be so pissed at me. No, but so you got folks like that who are sort of, you know, they deal more with sort of, you know, being open to different sexuality and different, you know, body image and stuff like that. And then there's some folks who are kind of like, it's about chicks with tattoos and piercings, but essentially doing the same kinds mm-hmm. of things they normally do. So,
right.
What comment on that then for me?
Well, it's interesting because I've actually been wanting to do a post about this for a while on my own blog, because there's it's interesting. There's a public perception of what alt porn is, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And then there are definitions of alt porn from, you know, like from my perspective working at Fleshbot, you know, alt porn is a tag that we put on certain types of posts.
Right.
And, you know, those types of posts usually indicate that basically, you know, it's not frat girl amateurs, and it's not, you know, silicone-enhanced Barbies from Silicon Valley, you know, from mainstream porn, but what you're getting is, you know, pale, tattooed chicks with piercings.
Yeah, basically.
And that's kind of, that, you know, that are unenhanced and have a punk ethic and stuff like that. And that's kind of how we've loosely ended up defining it. You know, there's a bunch of us Fleshbot is a group blog, so there's like three or four of us that work there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of had to, you know, make a really loose definition of it there. But it's interesting because I made a post a little while back that made a comment about alt porn and sort of alluded to the commodification of alt porn, because I think it has been really commodified and sort of turned into like a package.
Oh, gee, you think so?
Yeah, and what was interesting was that I got some criticism about that on another blog, where someone said, you know, and it was a woman who loves porn who wrote in her blog, I don't know why Violet said that, because I love alt porn. I love the tattooed girls and the no fake breasts, and I just love, you know, seeing piercings and stuff like that. And it came, you know, to me, I don't want to say simple way of looking at it, but it was a really, to me, it sort of clarified what people are seeing on the outside of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, you know, we've got like, you know, Ian McKay is a friend of mine, but he's working for BCA, which is owned by Larry Flint Productions, which is Hustler, and, you know, and he's making mass market alt porn, you know, which is basically the same old porn for the most part with, you know, with some alt porn chicks.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and then on the far, and I love Ian, so and he, you know, he can spank me when he sees me next if he hears this. And then, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, you have actual indie sites, you know, where it's like, you know, someone is like, I just want to make a site with, you know, me and a bunch of friends, and then it starts to grow into something else, and it just happens to be the kind of girls that, you know, that you see at the coffee shop serving your coffee, and the cute boys that work at the record stores and stuff like that, and have piercings and tattoos, look like, you know, city denizens and people would be in bands and make art and stuff like that. And that to me is a lot more true to the spirit of alt porn when it comes from an independent perspective, and you don't see formula, and you don't see, you know, the usual, you know, six or seven positions and reverse cowgirl and coming on the girl's face, which I like most of the time, but you know what I'm saying.
Well,
you know?
It gets
and
a little then, played out, then, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, on the whole, you know, from the public perspective, like the big media mainstream perspective, you know, actually believe that something like Suicide Girls is alt porn. And they kind of don't get it, because like, you know, as has been discussed many times, that site doesn't actually really have any porn on it. That site barely has nudity on it. So it doesn't even qualify as porn, but it has a certain type of girl on the site, and so people tend to refer to it as an alt porn site. And that site, too, is just, like, scared to fucking death of being associated with porn, which I think is the biggest hypocrisy on the face of the fucking planet. But that's a whole other topic. No, so figuring out what alt porn is, like, alt porn is, you know, for people who look at porn, it's going to be a lot of different things. But for the most part, it's just going to end up, you know, falling into the category of, you know, pale, pierced punk girls. Whereas for people like us who, you know, alt porn has a lot of deeper meanings and a set of ethics that go with it that are a lot more along the lines of punk ethics. And I'm not talking about pop punk ethics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about real punk ethics, where it's about community and it's about, you know, expressing sexual individuality and you know, a lot of different things
that
have greater meaning rather than selling a fucking product, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's a long answer. I definitely have a lot of perspectives on it, but.
Oh, no. I like long answers because it means I have to think less.
But I think that, you know, alt porn, a lot of porn being made under the banner of alt porn has turned into the exact same meat grinder that is coming out of Silicon Valley. It's just kind of coming from different perspectives. And it's just, in my eyes, for a lot of things that call themselves alt porn, it's just a matter of time before they're under the same network of mafia-style, you know, distributorship that, you know, basically all porn in America is distributed essentially just by a tiny handful of companies. And if you don't adhere to the 6 or 7 sex positions and the 6 or 7 scenes and, you know, and the requisite blonde and the requisite girl scene and all of that crap, then you don't make it into the distributors and you don't get distributed.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, people like Tony Comstock are in New York making films that aren't getting distributed by these big boys and are doing really well, thank you very much, by, you know, doing their own homegrown distribution. And, you know, that to me speaks of the ethics of alt porn right there. And his porn, too, especially speaks to that because he's making his porn in a lot of ways to challenge the system.
Right.
And to challenge also the way the world sees porn and saying, okay, well, you know, if sex is a crime, here I am, come and get me, basically.
Right, right. Do you think that alt porn as it is viewed, let's say, in the more mainstream way, where you have, whether it's true or not, a female front to a site that and it's sort of done supposedly from a female perspective, do you think that is going to change the porn industry in any way other than being sort of a flavor of the week kind of thing? Is it going to be, or is it just going to end up being kind of a flash in the pan? I mean, you can start seeing some of this now where you're starting to see more mainstream journals kind of picking up on it. I think Ian McKay is a example of that. I think
Joanna Angel, because she was in the New York Times, you know.
Right. Well, and now I see, you know, I saw, I can't even remember where exactly I saw it. I think I was just browsing around some TGP site, and I found a set of hers that was like, that was branded Danny.com, you know, and I was like,
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And she just did a movie. She was in that movie that Tristan's doing, the new one. And it was kind of like, hey, there's Joanne Angel getting fucked by a big muscular black guy with a big dick, you know.
Mr. Marcus.
And you know, I'm not dissing Mr. Marcus, that's cool and that's his thing, but it's like, wow, look at this juxtaposition. It's not like a skinny punk rock dude, you know. And
Totally. He's as mainstream as it gets for African-American performers,
right?
You know, which are so fucking few and far between in the mainstream industry.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of unfortunate, but I mean African Americans in the industry are essentially a fetish, which is a little bit disturbing. But
it's fucked up. When people are like, I want to watch porn, but I'm not sure because I worry that it's a racist and sexist industry, and I'm like, well, yeah, it is. You know, look at what Shawn Michaels went through, you know, he had to deal with performers that wouldn't have sex with him because he was black, you know, and that was something that was accepted for a while. And he said, fuck y'all, and started his own line, which I think is great.
Right.
But, you know, it's just really sad that that's how it had to happen, you know.
Right.
And that it still goes on.
Well, and, you know, I don't know it from the... you know more about the inside of the mainstream industry than I do. But I have to figure that when you're dealing with an industry that clearly plays in general to in some sense, sexuality is sort of deals a lot. It doesn't exclusively, but it tends to deal with some certain reptilian instincts. You're kind of putting things in sort of a lowest common denominator, you know, kind of way, and you're marketing to that, and you tend to that tends to be the way you do it. And so
I agree, but I would have to say though that for the mainstream industry that there are, again, the content is controlled by the distributors, and the distributors are a handful of old men with old man values about sex and sexuality. And so don't forget that when you're talking about it, or at least, you know, I want everyone to know that that's, you know, they're not creating porn for the market.
Right.
You know, they're creating porn for their perception of the market. And that's what's been really cool to me about alt porn, for all of its complications and irritations and stuff like that, is that alt porn has at least been something that's come up because people have wanted it.
Right.
You know, like porn that comes out of Southern California, you know, yeah, it could sell a fucking thousand times better if they listened to the people that watch their movies, or at least treated, you know, the viewers with some respect.
Right.
I'm the consumer advocate, so.
That's very good. You're sort of the consumer reports of the porn industry.
The pornographic consumer advocate, yeah.
Right, right. No,
sure.
No, I dig what you're saying. I mean, it's some of that is just stuff that I don't know, because I'm not, I mean, in terms of mainstream porn, I'm purely a consumer and I don't deal with that. You know, I don't have that kind of knowledge of it.
Totally.
I know a lot of shit about
this little
whole, you know, genre, but that, you know, that kind of doesn't mean shit when compared to this. Well, one thing I was going to say was that it's interesting to me with all the back and forth and drama and shit that you see within this little genre of alt porn. Sometimes I kind of want to step back and say, yeah, but it really isn't that fucking bad comparatively. Fuck, man. If you think this is that bad, you can walk away from it. You know what? If you want to, you can step out of it. You can just fucking unsubscribe from that group in MySpace, and then you're not dealing with it anymore. And if that's the worst that this, you know, if that's the worst genre that we're generating here, if that's the worst example of how fucked up it can get, it's not that bad.
Well, the thing too, though, it's a lot of it has to do with the values of alt porn and the values of alt porn versus the values of mainstream porn about sex.
Right.
And the values of mainstream porn about sex is that sex is shameful, and that the people that are watching it are dudes in raincoats who have dirty secrets and are bad people for watching their porn. And so you don't see, you know, that there isn't a healthy attitude coming out of the industry out of it. Whereas in alt porn, it's just a given that sex is good and healthy, you know, and that people, you know, that it's hot and people are doing it because they want to, you know, and they want their viewers to get off. And it's really crystal clear when you look at the way the material is presented, and the fact that in alt porn, the girls are smiling, you know, like
oh,
they're
yeah.
fucking having fun, you know? And the guys are totally having a blast. And, like, in mainstream porn, you can walk down and pick at random any film, and you will see no smiles, no kissing, no caressing, women who won't make eye contact with the people that are fucking them, you know, and are flipping off the camera because they think the people watching are perverts. And it's just kind of like, okay, here's a really big difference.
Right.
So, I mean, it's way better than not that bad. It's fucking light years away, and I think that's why it's become, you know, such a genre, a powerful genre in its own right.
Right.
You know, it's like I said, people are smiling and having fun with sex, and wow, what a new concept, you know. And they also know that girls are watching too. You know, they're not just like, you know, hey, did you get your rocks off yet, you pud? They're just like, hey, I hope you're fucking. You're all fucking when you watch this, you know?
Right.
So, it's, you know, there's a much more, it's a much more healthy perspective on sex. Even though some people, you know, I've heard comments from, you know, Playboy fans about alt porn girls where they're like, they're damaged, they have piercings and scars, they, you know, they need help or whatever. But, you know, I think that that's a really small minority of people who see alt porn that way. I think a lot of people see it as finally something I want to look at, where something that finally reflects how much I like sex.
Right. And, you know, yeah, I might say to a guy like that, well, how are they any more fucked up than, you know, any other person who's going to be doing this kind of stuff? I mean, there's plenty of people who I'm sure have personal problems who are performers, and there are plenty of them who don't.
Well, I know what you're saying, though, because, like, you know, take a look at the, you know, every once in a while there's a big starlet in the mainstream industry who, you know, does the craziest, most fucked up porn, and then all of a sudden quits porn and renounces her porn past and becomes a Christian. You know, like, Missy's a really good example, and Tracy Lords is another good example, you know, who are just like, porn is bad and Christ is good, and it's just like, wow, you know, some girls cut themselves, but other girls really fuck themselves up on the inside to get there. You know what I mean?
And
that to me is more emotionally painful. It was like, well, what were you doing in porn in the first goddamn place? Obviously bad career choice, you know?
Right. I mean, it's great if people can get into it who genuinely want to get into it and want to express their sexuality and want to do that stuff. And I think you see more of that within the alt porn stuff than you see sort of the prototypical, you know, I'm stereotyping, but the impression I get is that you definitely get maybe a little bit more of the, of a person who maybe has had some family issues, you know, some problems with that, and are getting into this to sort of compensate for emotional problems they have. So how is that necessarily any really all that different? You know, if they're...
Well, how is that any different than someone, you know, who gets into, you know, a career in marketing, you know, and takes all their emotional problems with them there? I think that porn, in a lot of ways, is just like any other industry, and you've just got the same, you know, the same sort of grab bag of people who have a healthy perspective on their jobs versus people who have an unhealthy perspective on their jobs and their lives.
Yeah, I'd say that's certainly the case, yeah. one thing that I wanted to touch on with you, because you've talked about it a fair bit, is 2257, and maybe for folks who, and you know, especially in alt porn, I think a lot of folks don't necessarily have a great understanding of what exactly that is. Can you maybe do a little bit of a breakdown on it and what's recently changed with it and what the problems are with those changes?
It's interesting because I have been talking a lot about 2257 for at least the past 24 hours, if not longer, because of TribeNet, the social networking system that is much like Friendster and Orkut. Mm-hmm. They've decided to try to apply 2257, the 2257 regulations to their architecture and to their members, which is a big mess. But basically what 2257 is 2257 is a federal law that is in regards to record keeping of pornographic material or material that depicts sexual activity. And Attorney General, I guess then Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, made some changes to it during the summer that are now starting to go into effect. Mm-hmm. And basically what these changes entail are that not only do you have to keep all the usual records, which is basically proof of age on file for, you know, any porn that you make or any photos that you shoot, certifying that your models are over 18, but any... not just primary producers of the content, but also secondary producers of the content, and people who also display that content on any websites or in any books or in any published materials need to have a proof in the form of a photo ID and the social security information of each person involved in the sexual activity in records that are in a physical location in a business that can be accessed by the public at least 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And the definition of sexual activity under the law is so vague that it could easily... It's extremely difficult to interpret what sexual activity is in the way that it's worded within the law, in that if you looked at a picture of a girl who had a red ass, you would have to ask yourself, is that red from a sunburn or is it red from a spanking? And you know what I'm saying? Like,
right,
it's a really, it's a very, very difficult call to make. And with that in mind, that would also extend over into the arena of freedom of speech issues. So, for instance, if a site wanted to put up photographs from the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, they would need to have the 2257 information for all of the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the changes that have happened to the law, in my eyes, have made the law unenforceable. But what they have done is they've made it very, very... Well, what I think they're trying to do, the law, they're saying the law, and I've read through the law, it's like so fucking long, it's crazy. But basically the reason behind the law is to protect children as possible performers in pornographic activity.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what the law ends up doing is it ends up legislating porn and freedom, certain types of freedom of speech and sexual expression in an image related medium into logistical unfeasibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big messy ball of wax that affects more people than people know. I think it affects if they did decide to enforce it, first of all, they would need a lot of money, a lot of agents, and it would just be insane. And they would have to enforce it in a way that would be that would get everybody, you know. And that they would have to go after people in Hollywood. They would have to go after people with First Amendment sites that published photos from Abu Ghraib,
right,
you know. And they would have to go after all of the pornographers ever in existence. And it's funny because what the law actually doesn't do, the law actually doesn't go after people who are dealing with illegal porn content, you know, because
right,
people who make porn keep really fucking good records,
right,
and they've done so on purpose, because even when the laws were listed on the creation of explicit adult material in 1972, like, it was still a felony to make porn,
right,
you know. And people who were making porn here in, you know, when they made Deep Throat and in New York, and when they were making some of the porn out here in California in the early 70s, like, you know, they would be at undisclosed locations,
right,
and they would, you know, they would all meet in secret and make porn because they knew they could get thrown in jail immediately if they were caught. But they kept really good records about what they were doing, because if they did get caught, they didn't also want to be thrown in jail for child porn.
Right.
And then when the Tracy Lord scandal erupted, when she revealed that she turned 18 after being in the porn industry for 3 years, the porn industry, the mainstream porn industry, just totally fucking freaked out, because they had been so careful to make sure, you know, that people were old enough to be in porn, who were actually in porn.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the case came up, it was actually thrown out of court, because Tracy Lawrence had been using a government-issued passport as her form of ID, so she had effectively fooled the U.S. government into thinking that she was 18 as well. So basically what that says is that, well, that's not a really good way then to keep people from, you know, from performing in porn underage. And, you know, and it's not a law that's like, oh, those naughty pornographers just need to keep their records. Well, since the Tracy Lawrence scandal, you better fucking bet they've been keeping their records.
Well, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
They've been keeping, I mean, they have been. They've been keeping really strict records for ages and ages. And if anyone who's watched a porn film and has had to fast forward through all the legal bullshit in the beginning to get to the part that you want to jack off to, knows.
Right, exactly.
You know, those records have been being kept. So it's, you know, it's not a law that helps children at all, you know, and it's not a law that does anything to stop, you know, bad things from happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really annoying.
How do you think people can address this? Within the genre of alt porn, or just within, you know, people who are involved or interested in erotica and adult entertainment in general, what do people need to be doing about this?
Well, I think one of the first things that I would recommend doing is going to the EFF's website, and it's the Electronic Freedom Foundation, and that's EFF.org. And they have a 2257 page that has a lot of information about 2257, and it's their job basically at EFF. They have some fabulous staff attorneys that are working really actively for consumer rights on a number of issues, and they're not at all squeamish about sex and what it means about 2257. And in fact, just as a side note, they're one of the people who filed a lawsuit against Sony for the Sony DRM packages that were coming in Sony music discs that infected computers all over the United States.
Right.
So they're pretty much the good guys. And they're also not beholden to the mainstream porn industry. Like the Freedom of Speech Coalition is an organization that is part of the mainstream adult industry,
mm-hmm.
and they've brokered some kind of backroom deal with the Justice Department that only includes their members, and they were taking membership up until a certain date to be included in this deal that they brokered with the Justice Department. And of course, to be a member, you had to join, and of course, to join, it was like anywhere from a couple hundred to several thousand dollars.
Oh, fabulous.
So it was really shady. Yeah, it was super shady, and I have no idea what you know, just how protected any of those people are, or whether it's actually made them into sort of a target list,
right.
If you ask me.
Yeah, right.
But I think, I mean, what people can do is get educated about it and learn about it and be really smart about it. Like, I really don't think, you know, and think about, too, like, your site, the kind of site that you really think that they're going to be looking at. And if you do think that, then definitely, you know, keep your records. And, you know, I wouldn't ever advise anybody to do any type of protesting that might get them in trouble.
Right.
However, what I do is something completely different oftentimes. So, you know, how I'm going to protest it is definitely going to be in my own way. But yeah, go to the EFF page. Get educated. You know, putting up things that say, you know, the government has made us do this. It's really hard. Something like that, like Gaping Maw voluntarily took their site down because they were one of the Rotten.com sites.
Uh-huh.
They weren't a porn site. They were just a shock value site. And Rotten.com has done, like, you know, guys in Rotten have, you know, have gone to Supreme Court hearings. You know, like, they've done a ton of First Amendment work about freedom of speech. And a lot of Rotten.com exists purely as an act of freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they took down Gaping Maw as a statement. But also that they knew that, you know, none of their stuff would comply to the laws, but also to make just sort of a loud statement and an example. The sad part behind that is that Gaping Maw is now gone.
Right.
So now when you go there, you just see a message. So, you know, you have to wonder, like, is that effective or not, you know? And it's all, too, like a matter of evaluating risk. Like, how much risk do you feel like you want to take? And if you feel like you want to take a risk, you know, get yourself a good fucking lawyer or a good team of lawyers.
Right.
And for the rest of us, well, we're just going to wait and see what happens.
Right, right. I dig you.
You know, I'm not going through my blog and, you know, trying to figure out if it's a sunburn or a spanking.
Right.
You know, my site's a fucking education site, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
It's all going to be really interesting to see how this comes down. And, you know, and I'm going to make sure that if I'm involved in any type of prosecution or if I or any indictments or anything like that, me or my friends or associates, I'm definitely going to make sure that the issues get taken as far as they can and are protested as loud as they can, and there's as an even application of justice as possible in all of this.
Right on. Right. Yeah.
It's possible.
Hey, so did you talk to Apple? Where is my fucking podcast in iTunes? Have you talked to them yet?
I don't know what's going on, but you know what? It's not just sex podcasters that are having problems getting their podcasts on.
Right.
I've been actually talking to a couple of different people about it. And I know that Apple at Macworld is going to be launching a bunch of new stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm wondering, and Macworld is in early January, and so I'm thinking or I'm hoping that they're going to launch I don't know if you've noticed, but their podcasting apps have improved with each new launch of iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm thinking is that there's definitely some kind of bug going on, because people who have podcasts that work perfectly well are having a hard time getting their shit submitted to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, Apple contacted me and had me come out and took me on a tour of their facilities and everything like that. And I was out there for 3 hours, and I actually got to ask all of the people who had the answers what the heck was going on, like in terms of, like, you know, sex podcasts, were they being censored on iTunes? And my question, and I grilled them too, by the way, and my
right.
questions were completely answered to my satisfaction, in that they were not taken down for any reason regarding censorship or content.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't know. It was early in their program.
Mm-hmm.
It was when they had just launched it. And I don't think that it was just sex podcasts that came down. But the way that the media grabbed the whole story was that, you know, Pilot Blue and a bunch of other people's podcasts have been taken down. Is Apple censoring sex? And so that's kind of like where the ball started getting rolling.
Right, right.
And, you know, the people, too, that are having the sex podcasters, I mean, you're not the only one, that are having a hard time. They're, you know, they're submitting their podcast. They're getting, you know, you have a technical problem, and then they try to resubmit after they try to fix whatever their problem is or what they think their problem might be. Then they get the message, you've already submitted this.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking it's some kind of bug, because it's, you know, like, it's people that I know that their podcasts are through Libsyn.com, you know, which completely has this awesome back end built into it to ensure that your podcast goes smoothly into iTunes.
Right.
So I think it's a bug on Apple's side, to
mm-hmm.
be quite honest. I don't think it has anything to do with it. But, you know, I mean, if people who have sex podcasts are having a hard time getting their sex podcasts into iTunes, they should definitely email me and send me their podcast, because what at least I can do is I can give it a big fat mention on Fleshbot.
Right, absolutely.
And get attention toward their podcast there, and then also, you know, get them onto Odeo.com, which is another totally excellent place to find sex podcasts.
Right.
They are not shy about mm-hmm. sex content there at all either. And, you know, the more attention you get and the more steamrolling you get, you know, we'll probably, you know, hopefully get them to fix their bugs a little bit faster.
Absolutely. Well, this, I think Skype's starting to destroy itself now, so I think...
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's time to let it go, as you know. But I wanted to say
indeed,
thanks.
Indeed.
Thanks very much
right.
for your time. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
And I'll probably post this in a couple days. And so, yeah, thanks again for your time, and I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's so great to finally get a chance to talk to you after, like, linking to you a billion times and passing emails back and forth and stuff.
And I appreciate
cool
every one of those links, let me tell you.
Cool. All right, I'm looking forward to the podcast.
Absolutely. All right, take care then. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for tuning in to the second edition of the AltPorn.net podcast. Next time, we'll have a conversation with blogger and video podcaster Ms. Kitka. And until then...